It's like our favorite speculative game, Alpha Black Black.
Yeah. This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 221 for Friday, April 30th, 2010. On today's show, Josh Augustine interviews Eskil Steenberg, creator of the unusual and intriguing MMO Love. But first, will Bungie return to PC development? Free-to-play action RPG Mythion launches an open beta. APB prepares its inaugural spree. Team Fortress 2 fans will have something tangible to covet soon. And MechWarrior 4 is free for the taking, plus a few extra things on today's show. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, and with me today are PC Gamer's own Evan Lottie.
Hey there.
Josh Augustine.
Howdy.
Eric Belsas.
Josh, you stole my howdy.
I apologize. You can have it back. I'll switch to a hearty ahoy.
How piratical of you.
Thank you.
And our producer, Andy Bauman.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good. And Evan, you're Skyping in on your day off. Tell us, why do you love our listeners so much?
Yay, Evan!
I just have such a deep set affection. Plus, I can do it in my shorts, so it's very comfortable.
All right, let's just keep the shorts on at least.
No, that's the bare minimum.
That won't be a problem.
Okay. We'll just have to take his word for it, though. We have no verification.
It's just best that we don't think about it.
I can turn on the webcam for visual.
Please don't.
Okay.
All right. So there was some surprising news to kick off this week's show. Activision has signed a 10-year agreement with Bungie to publish their games through 2020. So we can expect probably three or four games out of that deal. The first one, the speculation is that we'll announce at E3, which is just around the corner now. So I guess the question with you know, Bungie having been exclusive to Microsoft for so long and exclusive to the Xbox for so long, is this relevant for PC gamers? And I guess for me, the answer is yes, because unlike Microsoft, Activision has a pretty good record of bringing games to the PC where it makes sense. In the case of like every shooter they do pretty much. I'm kind of excited about this.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, there's a lot to be excited about. You could even say Bungie as a developer, obviously they developed Myth back in the 90s, that there's maybe some interest in just within the developer themselves. They care about the PC. You can sort of see through it, see it through what they did with Halo 3, the Forge map editor mode, and the replay system. I mean, features that aren't necessarily as prominent in console shooters that they developed and would transition well on the PC, and then they have proficiency in. So I'm really excited about it. The thing I'm curious about, though, is it was kind of my understanding that Bungie left its ownership with Microsoft because they were getting tired of publishing the same game over and over.
That's pretty much
what Activision does. Now, granted, they're not owned by Activision. They just have an agreement, and I'm sure there's probably some very direct guidelines about what they're going to be publishing and if it'll be more than one franchise. But kind of similar situation, maybe potentially.
Yeah, and Activision is definitely they're known for at least using the language exploit franchises on a yearly basis. Evan, going back even further than Myth, Bungie's roots are actually in Mac development with the Marathon series, eventually came to the PC as well. But I first played a Bungie game on a Mac. They were initially going to do Halo on Mac, PC, and Xbox before Microsoft bought them. The question is, after so long, slaving in Microsoft's Halo mines, do you think they remember how to make a good PC game?
I don't know. I remember I saw a video tour of the Bungie offices on Inside Xbox, which is like a channel on Xbox Live. Don't freak out, listeners. I have an Xbox. And they had like this huge room just full of Xbox 360s, stress testing the hell out of everything. And now they're going to have to make another room for the PS3. And yeah, there you go. Thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I guess they have said they're ready to step up to the challenge of developing on the PlayStation 3, which is apparently a pain in the ass for a lot of developers who haven't done it before. So by comparison, developing on the PC is easy. So I'm sure I'm sure, like I said, Activision will bring their games to the PC like where it makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a huge rift in the industry that everybody is following. So it comes at funny timing. I'm sure they were like, well, should we wait a little bit or is things just going to get worse and we needed to announce this now?
What kind of things getting worse?
Exactly. With, the Infinity Ward suing Activision and stuff like that.
All right.
Yeah.
And like 30 of their employees leaving and
yeah. just bad feelings all around.
Right. Right. And, speaking of which, Activision, I guess tonight by the time people probably hear this, it'll have been shown off, but Activision is showing off the new Treyarch developed Call of Duty game, which called Black Ops. And the scuttlebutt, you will know more than we do when you hear this probably, but the scuttlebutt at this early hour is that it will take you kind of around the world to places like Vietnam or to Cuba or a variety of other locations doing like CIA undercover stuff, or not undercover, but deniable operations kind of things.
So you'll play the Activision guys firing Infinity Ward guys?
Yeah, raiding the Infinity Ward offices and finding evidence that they're making a deal with EA.
Oh.
Yeah.
Black Ops.
Well, I mean, aren't, Black Ops, but modern warfare in Cuba and in Vietnam, that's not modern, guys.
Well, maybe it's like going, maybe it's a tour through history.
Yeah, this one's...
It's not called Modern Warfare. It's called Call of Duty Black Ops.
Yeah. So there's no Modern Warfare in this. It's just like World at War, Treyarch's last Call of Duty game. It is not, in the Modern Warfare universe, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. They could just call it Warfare.
Right.
Black Ops are the most dangerous of all ops.
It's
dangerous. Yeah. So I think it's safe to say they're going to have there's an iPhone version of that zombie Nazi mode that they put out for the last one.
Oh yeah, I think they confirmed that there will be a zombie mode for this.
Yeah, I would assume it would be even bigger, like maybe four player. Who was a four player co-op? I can't remember.
Yeah, nobody played it.
It was. Yeah, I didn't play it, but I think it'll be a bigger part.
I played like two rounds of that zombie thing. It's like I think I'd rather be playing Left 4 Dead.
Exactly.
And it was kind of cool. It's just like the barricade up the windows and shoot the zombies through the windows kind of thing before they break in.
Yeah.
Which, Left 4 Dead doesn't have that mode, like a barricading mode. So, it wasn't completely ripping off Left 4 Dead. But, now that Infinity Ward is like imploding, I guess Treyarch is now like the alpha developer for Call of Duty now? Because they were kind of the second string guys before. They were doing like the odd numbered ones.
Yeah, I suppose if Infinity Ward truly kind of ceases to exist, they'd be the ones. I mean, I enjoyed World at War, was a really quality game. It maybe didn't live up to the stuff Infinity Ward was making, but it was still a really great game. Treyarch makes a really fun shooter.
And I think Evan will disagree with you on the really great part.
Yeah, I would tone that down a little bit. Yeah,
I enjoyed myself.
People love to hate on them just for the fact that they make a slightly less, slightly whatever. They make a less good game than Modern Warfare, but it's still good. It's still fun.
Oh yeah, it was certainly a good game. There's no disputing that. But it may be just a fact that you're putting it next to a game that a lot of people love.
Exactly.
Yeah. So by comparison, it's hard to follow that act.
But now we've got Sledgehammer Games making a third person Call of Duty shooter, I think. Right.
Right. That's the rumor anyway. Or I think that's been confirmed. Now that say Infinity Ward is out of the picture at this point, you think Activision will then kind of promote Treyarch and put all the resources that they gave to Infinity Ward into Treyarch, and possibly that will make this a better game?
Yes.
You mean the bonuses promised?
that is incentive is always a good thing.
Okay. We saw, that can get messy as we found out.
Right.
The brand is the most valuable thing, right? I mean, the Call of Duty name is probably the most valuable name other than World of Warcraft in gaming right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll do whatever they can do to preserve that association of quality with that brand.
Right. And they have to know at this point that the next, not this Call of Duty probably, but the next one will be almost certainly competing directly with the original developers of Call of Duty.
Respawn or whatever?
Yeah, Respawn, they were originally at EA, then they went and did Medal of Honor, then they moved to Activision and did Call of Duty, and now they're back with EA doing whatever they're doing, but it will almost certainly be something competing directly with Call of Duty.
And whatever new Medal of Honor game is coming out.
Right. So yeah, but if Activision doesn't want what happened to Medal of Honor to happen to Call of Duty, they're going to have to, you know, really back up the money truck and mm-hmm. make sure that it's done right.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, like you were saying, Dan, you think things are interesting right now. Wait 18 months, they're going to be very interesting, and you're going to be playing some competitive products.
Right. Well, I think Infinity Ward will probably take longer than 18 months, considering they've only been developing a shooter like every other Call of Duty, with in conjunction with Treyarch, but doing the odd numbered ones. So
that would still put them roughly November, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine in this new situation, they'd probably be starting from the ground up with having to generate a new IP. I expect it'll be 2 years at least before we see what they do.
Unless they do a Guitar Hero crossover.
Yep. Modern Warfare Hero. In non-shootery news, Mytheon, the action RPG from Petroglyph, which, Eric, you played some of that for preview, right?
Yeah, I've played quite a few hours.
Yeah, it just went into open beta the other day. I personally, I've been trying to get into the game, but it keeps crashing on me. I don't know if that's why it has beta in the name.
Right? Yeah, I think they're getting hit pretty hard.
Right, and like the server capacity is always on high, so I know it's not everybody who it's crashing on. But Eric, tell us a little bit about what we can expect what I can expect when I finally do get in there.
Well, I wrote a preview that I believe is in the 200th issue. So that's probably out to all subscribers. But what it is it's a very Diablo-like action RPG set in the ancient Greek world where the gods are kind of angry with mankind, so you're at war with all their creatures and stuff that they're sending against you. The twist on it all is it sort of has a trading card game aspect where all your powers are built into power stones. And you collect these power stones by buying them from vendors, or they drop from enemies you defeat. And you build decks, per se. Decks of these stones, which get randomly dealt to you throughout the course of combat. So you never really know what powers you're going to have. You just have to sort of plan your deck ahead to find things that work well together and find things that might benefit, because it has co-op modes, it's an MMO. So find things that might benefit your friends when you go into combat.
So when you're on kind of the world map, you've got your deck, and then when you go into a combat instance, you get dealt a hand of, was it five stones?
Yeah, five stones, five of your powers.
And, right. when you use one of those, then it's randomly replaced by another from your deck.
Yeah, after about 8 or 10 seconds, it seems to be replaced. So you can't just like spam them over and over. And depending on your class, the powers are like, one class is kind of a summoner. So your powers will be summoning creatures and buffs for those creatures. Or one class is like an elementalist. So it'll be fireballs and giant ice spikes and stuff. So it's varied enough gameplay and really cool locations. And it's free. So yeah, I know it's just an open beta right now, but it's a fun game still.
So this idea with like this combat that kind of, it's almost mimicking like Magic the Gathering, seems to be really popular nowadays, where either like you're given a large set of abilities and maybe you have some power over choosing them, and this one it sounds like you have absolutely no power. How do you guys feel about that? Like, I kind of like having all of my powers always at my disposal and being able to like kind of making those on the fly judgment calls.
Yeah, I mean, it does add a little bit of randomness to the game. I mean, it forces you to do, you know, kind of unexpected things. Like if you've always got the same set of abilities, you kind of get into a rut. You know, you cast the same thing going into every fight, then you cast, you know, your strongest ability next, and then you cast, you know, whatever you're doing while you're waiting for the others to cool down. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, you know, forces you to kind of adapt on the fly. It keeps you from getting into that rut.
Yeah, let me put it this way, Josh. If you were playing StarCraft and you were Terran and you had like five random units to choose from, to you know, move in on your opponent or structures, I guess, too, maybe. Would that make it a more interesting game? And that's totally maybe a bad example, but...
Well, it would in the case of like StarCraft, you wouldn't necessarily want that because it would kind of remove the skill from it. Because I mean, with StarCraft, the idea is it's a totally level playing field, and it is your skill that wins the day, really. But mm-hmm. with something like this, it's
but
less about...
That same logic applies here, because if you get unlucky and you draw five really weak abilities and your enemy draws five really powerful abilities, you're screwed. There's no amount of skill that can save you there.
True. But, you know, at the same time, that is kind of life.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but we play games not to be like life.
True.
Yeah, to be fair, like every 10 minutes you get a like redraw where it just replaces your hand instantly with a new hand. So yes, it's still luck, but at least if you do draw like five gimpy rusty skeletons or something, you can replace them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I haven't jumped in there yet. I'm going to be jumping in the beta this weekend, so I'm not speaking from experience. It's just the trend kind of bothers me, where it is more based on luck, and because you do think on the fly when they give you new abilities, but you also think on the fly when you're facing new classes or new combination of classes and trying to figure out that. And that is a more interesting decision to me, not the decision of, okay, I only have these abilities, which one should I use first? But, you know, here's my enemy, here's the situation, which one of my 20 abilities applies best for this specific situation?
Well, but Josh, imagine yourself as a Greek mythical MacGyver, where all you have is a rubber band, a book of matches, and
one sweet, sweet mullet.
And that too.
The mullet card. Always a wonderful card. Oh, how many people still play Battleforge? Like four?
I don't know. I've played about 5 minutes of that game and I got distracted by something shiny and I kept meaning to go back to it. It's still installed on my machine. I just haven't gotten around to it.
It's a good looking game. I mean, it's pretty.
It's DirectX 11. They keep updating the graphics.
Yeah, actually, I've been meaning to. I'm kind of in a similar situation to Dan. Like, honestly, it's been number two on my list for so long, but as soon as I beat number one, another number one comes along and takes its place. I really, really liked it. I played it probably for 2 weeks pretty intensely. Dan, we should get back in there, maybe even this weekend.
Yeah, but then I'll forget how to play StarCraft again.
Can't play worse than I do.
That's true. But, so in other... other MMOs you might be interested in trying, but not for free. APB, the Grand Theft Auto-ish MMO, is actually officially launching on June 29th. And this is one that's been in the works for so long that it kind of snuck up on me. It's like I never actually expected it to launch. You know, not that it's had like a super troubled development as far as I know, but it's not that it had a super troubled development as far as I know, but it was just, it's been kind of in the works for so long that I just didn't see it coming, but now it's almost here.
I think part of that is bad marketing or just like, I don't know. I mean, when's the last time? I guess the last MMO EA did was Warhammer, right?
Right.
And this is another developer in the UK. Warhammer was, I mean, actually they put a huge push behind Warhammer, and this seems like it's been less so far. Maybe they're planning.
Yeah, really has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I vaguely knew of APB when it was going to be coming out. I thought it was coming out like later this year. There was no even like kind of general, hey, you know, it's going to be coming out soon or something like that. It was just nothing, radio silence, and then, oh, hey, it's coming out in 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, we did do a little bit of coverage not too long ago. I guess I just looked over the review, the release date, or maybe just didn't believe it. But anyway, it's coming in June, end of June, you know, barring disaster. So, but what's interesting about it beyond the, you know, it's got kind of a really cool character creator I've seen a few demos of, and you know, shooter gameplay and you know, gang battles and stuff like that. But another thing that's pretty interesting about it is the pricing model, which is not just the typical subscription. It does have a $10 a month subscription that you can sign up for, or you can sign up for 20 hours for $7.
Which is a little misleading, because it's when you think back to kind of how Global Agenda works, you're kind of in that community area and you're kind of running around crafting and buying stuff and talking, and all that time doesn't count towards those hours. So it's basically just going to be like time actually in a match or in a game where you're actually like playing the meat of the game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it is $7 for 20 hours. If you play more than 28 and a half hours in a month, you're better off just paying the flat $10 a month subscription. And they said it'll be cheaper if you buy subs in like 2 months or 3 months at a time. I mean, I can't see too many of like our readers, who are the more hardcore gamers who have a lot of time to invest into this, paying hourly. It just doesn't make sense. You're going to want to pay the monthly. But I mean, just having the option for, you know, maybe the next month, you know, it's going to be finals week or something and you're going to have a lot to do. And maybe you're only going to play like 2 weeks out of the month. You know, maybe that month you just want to go for the, you know, the hours. And just having that alternative is fantastic. It's just great. It's more flexibility.
But I mean, the thing is, you only save $3. And it seems like such a trap, because like say I think I'm only going to play, you know, 15 hours this week or this month rather. So I end up having more time than I thought, and I play over my 20 hours. Do I then have to pay another $7 to keep playing? Because that would mean I'm paying $14 a month for.
Well, I think you buy the 20 hours of game time. It doesn't just like disappear at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm. I guess that makes sense.
It rolls over per se.
But still, I burn more than.
But even if you run out at that point, you know, you can decide, okay, do I want to pay for a month now? Because I mean, you don't have to wait till the first of the month to pay for a month subscription. So you can switch back to the month. I mean, sure, it's only $3, but at the same time, I mean, if you're pretty confident, you're only going to be playing, you know, 15 hours, I mean, why pay $3 more? You can buy three double cheeseburgers at McDonald's for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for parents too. If they want their child to only be a gangbanger for like 10 or 15 hours a month.
But this is an M-rated game. I don't think that's going to be a big thing.
It is a great way for self-regulation though. If say that you have a lot of work and you don't want an MMO that's going to consume your life, this is a great way if you just like tell yourself, and if you're dedicated enough to be like, okay, I'm just going to pay, you know, $20 a month and that's all I'm going to do. It's a great way to kind of help you limit your time.
Limiting yourself to a mere 20 hours in a month, this it does seem like a long leash to be on.
Hey, it's better than no leash.
So do you guys think that this kind of pricing structure will take off? Do you think it'll be a success, or do you think that that it'll fade away after this?
It'll be a success in the sense that, I mean, why not? It won't hurt sales, and if anything, you know, it'll add a few. I don't think it'll be a big enough deal that anyone will be clamoring to be doing to add this to their subscription model, but it doesn't hurt, and it just helps, even if it helps a tiny amount.
For me, it's, I don't know, Josh, like, you're more aware of what pricing is at right now. The fact that they're starting at 10 is a little bit of a big deal, not like 12 or 15 or 13, right?
Yeah, it's quite low.
Yeah, the standard is 15, right?
So that's competitive, right? That's good.
Yeah, it's very competitive. And if you buy it 3 months, I'm assuming it's going to be probably $8.50 or $9 if you buy 3 months at a time. I mean, that's tremendous.
Although, I mean, the style of game that it is, the style of MMO is similar to Guild Wars, right? So you've got the social areas where you're running around, and then you've got the instance combat areas, which is also similar to like Star Trek Online. And so the overhead of running that service has got to be lower than for example a Persistent Universe. So and now Gary Steinman, folks, is practicing his bird pulse, apparently.
Oh no.
It's also very similar to Global Agenda, which I believe charges $15 a month.
Really? So, but I mean, like for Global Agenda, you don't have to pay that. That's just for the meta game, right?
Correct. Yeah.
I guess it is compelling in that it is cheaper than most, like all the other MMOs out there, except that you don't get quite the same experience as a persistent world game.
Yeah.
When we were playing Star Trek Online, I was like, hey, this isn't quite like World of Warcraft. It's like this is all instance combat, you know. So it's a slightly different feel.
Yeah, I would probably say reasonable rather than compelling. It's kind of like this is a more reasonable price to ask than if they ask $15, it would be very off-putting to people, I think.
Right. As Star Trek Online has to some extent found. Now I'd like to play a round of Let's Guess What It Costs. To arbitrarily celebrate the 119th update to Team Fortress 2, Valve announced they'll be partnering with a company called GamingHeads.com to sell some absurdly high-quality statues of the Heavy. And these things are 12 inches tall, which, according to my calculations, is almost 1 foot. And the pictures just look astonishingly good. They've got both the red and the blue Heavy. BLU, of course. He's in his classic gun-toting position. There are two different versions of the head. One's got kind of a stoic expression and one has this, you know, big wide open grin kind of, you know, crazed, mini-gunning expression. I'm not even a huge fan of Team Fortress 2, and I want one. So what do you guys think that it's gonna cost? There's been no pricing announced yet. But we can all rest assured that nobody's Googling the answer to this. Josh, what do you think something like this would go for?
I'm gonna say $79.99, and I would almost pay double that for this.
It will be double. There's no way.
Yeah. Eric, how about you?
That's really disturbing because literally in my head I was thinking probably $79.99, and then Josh said it, and I guess we've been roommates for too long.
I think you guys are crazy. I'm gonna guess before Evan, because Evan is the uber Team Fortress fanboy. So we're gonna wait and see how many testicles he'd pay. But but my guess is 250. Having seen the pictures of these, I would be shocked if it's any less than that.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you think, Evan?
You know, let's see. Based on my knowledge of vinyl collectibles, assuming it is vinyl, we don't even know what the materials are. If the gun will be sort of movable out of his hands and whatnot. But just like thinking about the detail of the item and the size of it, it's going to be at least 180. I think 180 is the minimum. And they've already said in advance that it'll be strictly limited. So that means money.
Yeah. So it's a limited edition kind of thing. And then, you know, if we can sucker some Valve folks into signing ours, then we can really flip that.
But how large did you say it is?
It is a foot tall.
Yeah.
Oh wow. It's sorry. Massive. I was thinking like 6 inches. Dang.
Oh Shaw. Maybe a second question. They're gonna be doing these for all of the classes conceivably. Which one or ones will you buy?
Spy. I would be all over the spy.
I would love to see Pyro. If they can find some way to get like a flame effect, it would be really, really cool.
Even though they nerfed the Pyro, you'd still want to buy a statue of?
Just for the cool effects. Honestly, Heavy would be the one that I would buy. Heavy is the class I play the most. I love his personality. It's so cool. I don't know. I think Demo Man might be kind of fun.
How about you, Eric?
Probably either Demo Man or... I'm a medic player. I mean, that's where 200 of my hours is in, and I would love a little foot tall medic on my deck. The desk, not deck. I wouldn't keep him outside.
And Andy, how about you?
The sniper all the way.
Nice.
So he comes with Jurati.
How many classes are there?
There's nine.
Nine? Okay.
Yeah.
I need somebody to make an oversized chess set out of all these guys. That would be incredible.
Oh, a chess set. Oh, wow.
Who would be the pawns? Scout. I guess Scout would be the pawn.
Yeah, Scout. Yeah.
Yeah, sniper for
Rook
the bishop.
Could be heavy. Yeah, snipe bishop.
Who's the king?
Probably spy.
Mm.
Soldiers, I think queen should
soldiers,
be spy.
Soldier's knight.
Yeah.
Oh, Soldier's Knight. That's good.
Pyro's probably Bishop, or I don't know.
Yeah, there's no obvious King and Queen though. Because it's so well balanced that it's hard to have a really powerful.
See, you could have the spy as the queen because he could have like a female disguise on.
There you go. Yeah, it'd be the spy with the mask on. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, that leaves just the demo and NG for King and Queen.
But just from like a merchandising perspective, you can definitely sort of see Valve's continuing plan. Like they're going to start doing comics and stuff, online and offline. That's kind of what we've heard. It's just nice to see them sort of rolling this plan further. Finally, an item that people can express their love of TF2 through, other than T-shirts, T-shirts are kind of automatic. Should we talk about the Pyro update a little bit?
Sure, if you want. I'm sure you've got plenty to talk about.
Yeah, I won't let it go on too much. I started on Pyro when I was playing TF2. That was my big class before I switched to Soldier and Spy. But so they're basically. Kind of the short of it is, the Pyro, he burns things, but he has a secondary ability in his basic flamethrower that lets him reflect certain projectiles. So,
such as rockets,
arrows, launched grenades, and they're basically lowering the amount of damage your basic flamethrower does, which is very interesting. I think that's by
20%.
20%. That's a pretty big balance.
That's very significant.
You're doing 20% less damage with your main gun. And your burn duration, meaning, if you light somebody up, they'll burn for 4 seconds less, 10 down to 6. So that's also significant in terms of finishing people off that have sort of fleed.
Fled.
Sorry. I'm very excited. So how they're compensating for this is... the air blast, which usually takes, I think it takes, used to take 25 ammo, or 25, yeah, 25 ammo to use, and you had 200, so you could use 8 shots, if I'm correct. They're reducing the ammo cost by 20%. So they're basically making you in a more defensive class. They're encouraging you to reflect more stuff and learn how to do that. It's kind of a finesse skill in some ways, though. I mean, most pyros that are playing the game right now can do it well and reflect stuff. And they're turning anything you reflect into a mini crit, meaning that when you reflect it back, it'll do 35% more damage than it normally would have. So I don't know. I think it's Valve obviously unafraid to shake things up. If whenever they feel like TF2 is stagnating in the least, they'll roll out a class update, do something significant like the Soldier versus Demo. They'll totally remake a class like this. I'm really curious to see what they're going to do with the engineer, but I'm not opposed to it, especially in terms of like how for soldiers and demos, they're the people that are most likely to have their stuff reflected. They're going to have to sort of pick what they shoot at now. If they're pushing a cart in like a push cart map like Gold Rush with a bunch of their team, they see a pyro in front of them and they just casually fire a rocket. That pyro can reflect that back and kill two of their teammates or something. Potentially, so I don't know. I'm hoping it changes at the game in that way and doesn't just make it really, really hard to burn people.
Have you played much since the update came out?
Not even a little, actually. Unfortunately, we're going to have an event tonight, and we're going to be playing some over the weekend and get some anecdotal evidence in there, I guess.
Yeah, I'll be interested to hear how it affects things. In related news, did you know that Soft Streamers is an anagram for Team Fortress?
Wow, that's nice. Without the two.
Yeah. So I guess the other bit of Valve news is that in about 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, Steam will come out on the Mac. Now we know there's still a lot of rabid Mac hate in the PC community. For me personally, as soon as they moved over to Intel hardware and let you install Windows, it's just like a more expensive PC that's got some custom software on it. So. Yeah, whatever. This is going to be, if nothing else, it will be a new influx of Team Fortress 2 and Left 4 Dead players. So, do you see a lot of rivalry happening in there? Do you see like Mac versus PC wars? Do you think there will be achievements?
God, I really hope any of that stuff that can be perpetuated, like especially achievements, would just be so like just in the sense of it being fun and creating like a little bit of history and fun. I mean, we were talking a few weeks ago, like, hey, we're not opposed to this at all. The more the merrier. That's great news. But yeah, I'm totally going to create an event in our Steam group and be like, hunt them like dogs. And then just encourage people to like seek them out and identify Mac users and count their kills. And it's going to be fun.
We do have a standing challenge from our sister magazine at Future here, the Mac Life Crew. But as soon as it comes out, we'll have to, we'll give them a little time to practice and then we'll take them on.
I wonder if they'll get hats to identify them as Mac users, like apples that they just put on their head.
That would be. I'm sorry.
May as well paint a bullseye on them or put a shoot me sign on their back.
They'll just be sitting there writing screenplays.
you could basically reenact William Tell, right? with the bow and arrow.
Yeah, the smoker will grab him, and you look. He has an apple hat, and you just leave him. Keep going. He deserves it. I don't know, Evan. Do you see this as like almost like a frat, like a hazing week, like where you're just like we're gonna give them a rough time, just because they're Mac users. But then in the end, you know, we can kind of join hands and play games together in the future from now on. Yeah. Or do you see this as kind of a continual thing?
Well, I'm not gonna touch them. I mean, join them. that's out of the question. No, I mean it'll be like a thing. Like, you know, people make fun of each other over chat, or they'll type things and it'll be kind of mean for a while, but you know, it won't be anything like Xbox versus PlayStation and that nonsense.
At the end of the day, they're playing on a mouse and keyboard, so they're okay by me.
Yeah. That mouse may or may not have one button, but who am I to judge?
Or be touch screen.
Oh, yeah. So fancy.
Yeah. So finally, in the news department, we have some very good news to deliver for mech fans. The promised free release of MechWarrior 4 is upon us. You can go to mechtech, mektek.net/projects/MW4. And there you'll download a clunky-ass downloader program that has yet to work for us. It appears to be torrent-based, but we assume that it's just broken because of the massive demand, because it just came out a couple hours ago. So eventually we will hopefully be able to get hold of the damn thing and play MechWarrior 4 for free. Evan, you're a huge MechWarrior fan, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
And what would you tell people to prepare them for their MechWarrior 4 experience?
I don't know. I mean, it's definitely the one that holds up best visually. It's not that bad. I don't know. Gosh, it's been so long since I played multiplayer, but I mean, I still think in general, like what I'm looking forward to, I think MechWarrior as a series has one of the best skirmish modes that I've played in the game. You know, I compare it to Red Alert. That's one of my other favorites. And just jumping in, you know, putting a quick lance together of mechs, throwing some ERPPCs, whatever your favorite weapons are. And there maybe you're turning on cheats that allow you to not use heat sinks and you know, just dropping onto a planet and shooting some arms off. It's a good feeling.
It is a very simulation-y game, right? You've got to manage your power allocation and your and heat and all that, and so it is a very complexicated game.
It can be, yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to. I'm hoping all the compatibility with like modern joysticks holds up pretty well. And that, yeah, I mean, MechWarrior as a whole, I think we represented this in our top 100 issue and some other stuff we've written on it. The base mechanic is resource management, like you're just saying, then heat and ammo, damage, rotating your torso. That's different, but you know, like you said, very complex. And I hope a lot of people have some good memories coming back replaying it.
But yeah, you'll definitely want to crack open the manual before jumping into that. I imagine it's got to come with a PDF of the manual to download, you know, which we will verify when we actually get it to download. All right, so now we're going to turn to Josh's epic-length interview with Eskil Steenberg, the one-man development team behind Love. It's a little bit long, but it's all good stuff.
So we have with us today on the podcast Eskil Steenberg, the creator of Love, the big MMO that we've kind of been talking about the past few podcasts, and is reviewed in our next issue of the magazine, July. So Eskil, let's start off with the basics. How long have you been programming? What's kind of your history?
I've been programming for about 10 years, not really, but almost 10 years. And before that, I was a 3D graphic artist, so I used to do 3D graphics and, you know, texturing and that kind of stuff. So I came from a sort of graphics background, and most of the programming that I've done is dealt with graphics and tools and things like that. And yeah, that's kind of my background. I'm pretty much self-taught. I'm a C programmer, kind of back to basics, kind of hardcore hacker style rather than scripting person, I would say.
Okay, great. So for those that don't know about Love, can you just kind of give a brief summary? What is Love, Eskiel? Explain Love to me.
You should know. Well, it's an online adventure game where you play with your friends and you play on a small planet. And on this planet, you can build your own settlements. And the game is really about building these settlements together with the other players. And you build them by first finding something called a monolith, which is kind of the base stone that creates a settlement. But after that, you go out into the world and find these objects called tokens. And the tokens is something you bring back to your settlement and give you new abilities, like new weapons and new tools and new things you can build. And what's really cool about this environment is that it's completely dynamic. So the world keeps changing as you're playing. It's always adding new things to explore, new things to do. And you can also change the environment. So the entire world is destructible. The entire world, can change. And within your settlement, you can actually build anything you like. So you can build, you know, buildings and houses and tunnels and whatever you want, really. So there's a lot of freedom. But on top of that, there's actually AI characters in the world. So you'll be playing against other settlements that are AI controlled from different tribes. And the different tribes have different architecture, different style, different, you know, they do different things. It's a first-person game. It's kind of action-oriented, but it's cooperative. You don't play against others. You play with other people. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a great, really quick, short summary to explain the kind of the nature of the game. Can you kind of give a few examples of kind of the tools that they can acquire and build their settlements and use to kind of interact with the world?
Yeah, to begin with, they get some tools like the edit tool that simply lets them grab hold of the ground and pull it up and down and make holes and, cave out a mountain or whatever, you know. And that means that they can sort of shape things. On top of that, they get all kinds of sort of pretty stuff. So they can build trees, they can build edges and things that make your city look pretty, windows and all kinds of things like that. But on top of that, you got a lot of stuff that are very sort of technical. So, for instance, you can find a manufacturing unit that allows you to manufacture a specific power-up. But in order to have that work, you need to power it. So in order to get power, you need to build a power grid. And then you can find a power source, and you can route the power through relays. So that's one more technical thing you can do. And then you can build your own security systems that have turrets or have sensors or mines or things like that. So you can build some really complex interactions in your settlement. And what's really fun about those things is that the AI uses the same technology to build their own thing. So, you know, if you want to disrupt the AI, you can go cut their power, or you can, take out their cable relays that, you know, deliver manufactured goods to them or things like that. And that will, you know, impact how they act in the world.
And of course, they'll be trying to do the same to yours as well. Like, will they go around and kind of reroute the power that you set up?
Oh, yeah. There's a sort of limited amount of power sources in the world. So if you're close to an AI settlement, they'll definitely try to route the power to go to their stuff instead of your stuff. So, yeah, there will be a tug of war.
The one thing that really kind of struck me about the game was, as opposed to most other MMOs where it's, because you call this an online adventure game, it's kind of, in many ways, it's very similar to MMOs, but in other MMOs, it's all about you, and it's all about your character, and building up your stats, and getting a new weapon, and getting new armor. And Love has an incredibly personal feel to it, but most of the time, I'm more interested in the world around me, and what the world is up to, and what the world is capable of doing, rather than, you know, what I personally am capable of doing. Do you feel like the world is more like the main character of this game rather than any of the characters playing?
I do think so, because I think that the characters are personal. So if you have a really cool character, that's good for you. But what's more important is actually your part in the world and the world itself, because that's really what you share with other players. If you're going to have an online game, it shouldn't be about yourself. It should be about the interaction with other people. So one of the things that are very, very different from other games is, for instance, that you are at sort of the level of your settlement, which means if you bring in a new weapon, for instance, to the settlement, everyone in the settlement gets access to it. And that means that you don't really work against other players. You don't compete who gets the most stuff, because if they get it, you get it. And that means that it's really, you get a community that is really nice, because everybody wants to help everybody. Because if someone else gets the gun, well, then I get it too. So I kind of want other people to succeed rather than, you know, fail. So I think, you know, that's part of the design. And the design is going to change over time. There's going to be some personal leveling up, sort of. But it's going to be very, very different from other games. And it's never going to be the sort of classic MMO.
Okay, interesting. And although kind of everyone's working together, if there are more than 10 people on the server, I believe, there can actually be more than one settlement. Are those settlements opposing, or are they still working together?
They're sort of separate. They can work together. They can't actually, you know, go to war against each other or anything like that. But you got plenty of AI settlements that can do that for you. What I really wanted with this game was a game where you could do a lot of things, and you can stay at home and build, or you can, you know, do technical things like, you know, thinking about the power grid. Or you can go out into adventure and just look at the world. Or you can go decide to attack a specific settlement. So different play styles can emerge. And if you had player settlements fighting you, they would constantly attack you. So you would constantly be, you know, thinking about defending and destroying the other settlement. Whereas if the AI settlements, they can be a little bit more calm. They don't have to, you know, go to war with you all the time. So it makes the game, you know, freer, I think.
Yeah. And so many MMOs, I mean, everything revolves around combat and conflict and battle. I mean, what made you decide to kind of create a game that revolves more around just kind of exploring and adventuring as opposed to, you know, fist to face combat constantly?
I think, you know, to me, I've always loved exploring. I love maps, and I love, you know, playing around in the world, starting somewhere and not knowing where to go, and just, you know, it's, to me, that's like one of the influences, I guess, is the original Zelda, which is just, you know, this expansive world, and just dropped into it, and you know, you don't have missions, you can just go wherever you want, explore it, make your own maps, and I really like that kind of game, and I think it's, especially for the PC, I think it's kind of a strength of the PC. Because on the PC, we still have games like that, whereas console games have gotten too hand-holdy. There's too many arrows telling you what to do and being, you know, I don't know. They don't let you do what you want. And that's like really what I wanted to do, even to a fault, because I think that one of the main problems that I've actually had with the game is that gamers gotten so used to having somebody tell them what to do, that if you drop them into a world and, you know, now go explore, they don't really know what to do because they're used to having somebody hold their hand.
So what are you kind of doing inside of the game? How are you trying to break players of that habit of needing that handheld or a checkpoint in front of them to keep them going? How do you keep them motivated in the game?
The game is not going to ever force you to do anything, and that's kind of the point. So there's some limitation to how much I can motivate people. On the other hand, I can do some really cool stuff. Like, for instance, if you have a settlement, it can be attacked by artillery. And if you get an artillery strike, it may destroy some of your things. But that means there's probably going to be another one in a while. And you can see where the artillery is coming from. So you better go deal with it. Because if you don't deal with it, eventually they're going to destroy your entire settlement. So when you get an event like that, it's almost like getting a mission, although it's not a forced mission. It's not, you know, when you go out and deal with it, you can deal with it by cutting the power to the artillery, or you can destroy the settlement, or you can do all kinds of things. You can build a force field that protects your settlement, or there's many solutions, and you can do whatever you want, but there's still sort of a cause and effect. And usually, at least with some more experienced players, when something like that happens, it really sort of kicks them into gear, and they know, okay, I got to go do something about this. There is some sort of forcing people to act without actually telling them this is exactly what you need to do, and this is the only way of doing it.
Yeah, I was really surprised. Kind of when I was playing, we got hit by artillery really bad after we just had set up a settlement. And immediately one guy kind of rose up to the leader role and was like, okay, this is where the artillery's come from. We need someone to go out and collect a blaster token, which would let us all get blasters. We need someone to go out and find the smooth edit token so we can all get smooth edit. And then kind of everyone just started kind of filling different roles. We didn't have classes, but one guy kind of took the role of leader. I took the role of the scout, and another guy took the role of the fighter. And we all just kind of chose our different tool sets on the fly to kind of fill these roles that we thought needed. I mean, it's a very liberating experience to just kind of let people decide what role they wanted to play at any certain time, rather than, you know, choosing a class screen. You know, I want to be the rogue, or I want to be the warrior. So what kind of role do you like to do in the game? Do you like to be more the leader, kind of organizing things? Do you like to go out and scout or cut power?
I kind of like to just look at people, I guess. That's the game designer in me. You know, the most fascinating thing in the game is the players to me. Because, you know, I know the game inside out. I know everything. So, you know, to me, it's really fun to see what people are doing with it. So, people ask me, why don't you play? You're just standing there talking to everybody and chatting and being sort of communicative. And that's mostly what I do. But I really like exploring. Exploring is a lot of fun. And obviously, building stuff is a lot of fun as well. I love building 3D stuff. And that's kind of why I build 3D games. So, but I think that I do that all the time. So I think I become very, very social when I'm in the game. That's not a fair, you know, it's not a fair question, because I do it for very different reasons than, you know, what I would do if it wasn't my game, you know.
Oh, yeah, so. I totally understand. So the first token you go for is the radio, I assume, then.
Kind of, yeah. You know, radio is important to me, and, you know, yeah, just seeing what people do and is very interesting to me, and just checking out.
Yeah. Well, in kind of games that give players so much freedom like this, players come up with outrageous things to do. That's kind of the best part. So what sort of things have you seen people do that kind of surprised you, or maybe you thought was interesting?
Just really how nicely designed some of the settlements have been. Really, really thought through, and people have really worked on them, and the architecture is amazing. And one of the coolest thing I saw was some people who made, there's something called a cable relay, which is basically a wire you can put between two relays, and then you can grab onto it and sort of ride it, and you can use it to sort of get over a hole in the ground or whatever you want. And some players used that to build a subway system inside their settlement, so they had underground cable wires they could ride to get to other parts of the settlement. So that was really cool. I really liked that. That was one of the coolest things.
That is really cool. That seemed, when I was playing, about every time I logged in, it was a new settlement on my server. I assume because maybe NPCs had attacked while people were offline. What's kind of the average life span of a settlement? Is it something that people are creating for good, or is it something that you want people to be making over and over again?
Well, I said that the perfect time scale for a settlement is 10 minutes less than when they get bored of it. So that's kind of the target time. And I think that, you know, in the beginning they used to be really old because the AI wasn't really smart enough to do all things. Now the AI has gotten a lot smarter. And actually there's a lot of tweaking that goes into how good the AI is and how they attack and when they attack and what kind of tools they use in order to make it sort of a fair and good, you know, game. One of the things that, you know, is very different from other games is like, if you walk into a room in most first-person shooters, the guys who are standing in that room were actually designed by a designer, and they're going to do pretty much what the designers wanted to. It's a very scripted experience, and everything is sort of fake, right? These guys don't have a home. They don't have, you know, they're not coming from anywhere. You know, it's not real. But in my game, it actually is. So if you're being attacked, you know, by a foot patrol, that patrol actually came from another settlement, and they actually, you know, they really pathfind their way throughout the world in order to get to you. And that means that if you have scouts out looking for them and can see them in advance, that's actually a useful thing. And that means that there's a million reasons why they might not actually get to you. You know, there might be water in between, there might be a hole, there might be, you know, all kinds of things. And since the world can actually change, that makes it really tricky because, you know, if they decide to go from A to B, they can route out, here's the plane we're going to, here's the path we're going to take. But then the path might actually change while they're walking because, you know, a bridge got blown up or, you know, something happened in the world. So the AI has to be super, super smart and super flexible. And I don't think the AI is super smart yet. I'm going to work more on the AI, actually. But what's interesting is that just to get the AI to show up is a huge amount of work just because they need to be able to handle a very, very large world and be very smart. So, you know, there's been a lot of tweaking to get that working. So some settlements actually are staying. Some settlements are really short, just a couple of, you know, minutes or hours. And then some settlements, once they get really powerful, they can stay for a couple of days. But those are really cool.
Yeah. And for those that don't know, I mean, you made this entire game yourself. And not only that, you made all the tools to make this game from scratch as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So
when you're talking about how complex this AI has to be, I mean, this is all one man's work that has done this. How long have you been working on this?
So the game has been in production a little over 3 years. So it's pretty normal, I guess, for a AAA game. So, but not to say that my game is a AAA game, but it's quite a long time to sit alone in your apartment hacking away.
Oh, I believe it. So when you started, did you know that you always wanted it to be a one-man project? Or, because I'm sure you could have gotten help from other people once this started going if you had asked. Why didn't you want others to help?
I kind of do want. Right now, I'm really exhausted, actually, so please help me. But I think when you have a project like this, it's hugely complex. And very few sort of open source games work out because of the complexity of making games. It's just really hard to make games, you know, anytime. And if I spend all my time doing this, I mean, I work 7 days a week, often, you know, 12 hours at least every day. It's really hard to have other people come in and work a couple of hours here and there because just getting them up to speed would take more time than it's actually worth. Yeah. And that means that it's really hard to do, you know, sort of open source and open projects like this. And, you know, I've talked to some publishers and they really like the game, but there's no way in hell they would have given me money. You know, if I would have walked in 3 years ago and said, hey, I'm going to make an online first-person shooter that's going to look really awesome and be 3D and everything, and I'm going to do it alone, give me money, you know, they would have thrown me out of the building, you know. Nobody's ever done anything like that. So, you know, it's really easy afterwards to say, wow, this is so cool. You should have gotten a lot of help. You know, why didn't people invest in this? But, you know, I didn't have this thing to show them 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, investing in it back then would have been really, really stupid. And and now there's kind of a, you know, catch-22 here because now – now I own everything. I have control over everything. So now I don't really need a publisher because I've already figured everything out. So even though they are interested, it's really hard to find a way to include them because, you know, the whole project has been built up on this idea. What the hell can I do alone that would be really cool? You know, with my super limited resources, how can I be really, really smart and solve all these problems, you know, in some smart way? So, yeah.
So, yeah, you mentioned art style. I forgot to ask about that earlier. I mean, what inspired the art style? It's extremely unique.
Well, it's a lot of trial and error, actually. If you go to my website, you can find all kinds of really early tests that look terrible. But you can also see that they look very, very different from the final result. But I think I always wanted it to look like a concept art painting. Because I think that concept art paintings always look so much better than the final product. They look kind of rough and cool, and you know, I kind of like that so much better. And then afterwards, everything gets sort of bump mapped and looks sort of game generic, and I kind of don't like that. So I wanted something that looked really different. On top of that, there was all kinds of technical limitations and actually mostly art limitations. Making all the art for a very big game is a huge amount of work. So you need to be, if you're going to do it alone, the art is really where you have to be smart because that's really what's going to kill you, production-wise. So, I needed to figure out a style that I could do, you know, sort of semi-procedurally where I could, you know, do some art, very small pieces of art, and then have that sort of replicate throughout the world and look really cool. So there was a lot of technical stuff like that. And actually, the funny thing is, if I made the game today, it probably looked quite different, just because while I've been doing this game, I've developed all my tech. And today, I have technology that is just way cooler than I did have, you know, 3 years ago. So today, I could probably make a game like this, as big as this, that it would be fully textured and bump mapped if I wanted to, just because today I have the tech to do it. But back then, you know, it would have taken, you know, a million man hours, and I didn't have that. So,
yeah. So for you, will love ever be complete? Do you have kind of an end goal that you want to get it to, and then you'll kind of be happy with and just kind of let the world evolve it naturally? Or do you think you're going to be kind of iterating on this constantly?
Right now, I don't see an end in sight. I'm really happy with the game the way it is right now. But I can actually announce that right about the time when this podcast will go out, I'm hopefully going to have an announcement of a major expansion. What the major expansion that is coming is going to be all about. So there's going to be, you know, I have lots of ideas. And one of the things that are really cool about, you know, adventure games and action games is that there is endless amounts of ideas that you could put into it. And now that I have the engine, I have the networking, all the graphics, and, you know, when you have an entire world like this, you know, you want to fix things and change things. It's like, you know, how many times have you played a game and you thought, you know, I would like exactly this game, but what if they did this different or change the rules a little bit, or what if they added this kind of weapon or whatever, you know? And in order to add that weapon, normally you would have to make an entire game and then add the weapon, which is, you know, extremely expensive and takes forever. So getting to the position where you have everything and can just add more and more stuff forever, that's a really nice place to be in, you know, from a game designer's point of view, because, you know, it's like the largest sandbox you can think of.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm really excited to hear what your plans for the expansion are, kind of long term. We'll have to have you on again soon to talk about all that stuff. If players or if listeners, you know, if this sounds interesting to you, if they want to find out more about it, where should they go to get information?
They should go to my website, kelsolar.com, kelsolaar.com. Or they can search for my name on Google, or they can even search for love on Google. I think I'll be on the first page, which is, that's an achievement in my mind. So I now define the word love, which is cool.
That is impressive. I'll also throw out there a wiki that was very helpful for me in understanding the game when I was first getting in is Love and Verses.
Yeah, it's an amazing amazing wiki that the community has written. And really, if you want to play this game properly, you should use TeamSpeak and get in on the official TeamSpeak channel and just talk to people. It's a whole lot of fun. People are really friendly, and it really helps you get over the hump of, you know, what the hell is this thing? Because that's kind of the two major feedbacks is I get is I love this and I don't get this. And sometimes I get, I don't get it, but I love it, which is okay, I guess. it's a game about exploring. So, you shouldn't feel that you need to know everything, you know, from the get-go. I think that's actually a good thing about having a subscription game. Where you paid for 30 days, so you can play as much as you want during those 30 days. So you can take your time and explore, and you don't have to, you know, get done quickly or whatever. You have your time to explore, which I think is part of the game, actually.
Yeah, that's great. You kind of gave part of this at the beginning of the interview, but so do you think you could just give a quick kind of 1 or 2 minute kind of advice for someone that's going to be checking out the game, wants to give it a try, just kind of what do you think they should do just to kind of help them have fun in the first few minutes of the game? Because it can be a little disorienting at first.
Yeah, I would say go into the TeamSpeak channel. That's my number one thing. So communicate with other players. And then when you actually get into the game, it's kind of hard to tell you what to do because, oops, we got a phone call here.
No worries.
What's interesting about the game is really hard to tell you exactly what you can do when you jump into the game. Because when you get into the game, you'll find that you'll be in a settlement, and the settlement can be very developed. So there's a lot of things there, or it can be very early on. I think that you should try to find the edit tool and start editing. Getting a hang of editing is a big part of the game, and I would start there. And then, you know, figure out how your inventory works. How you can, you know, pick up stuff and start there. Start with the really simple things and then sort of tag along other players when they go out into the world and explore with them and see what they do. And the real advice is always to, you know, communicate as much as possible with other players because that's really what's fun about the game is doing stuff together.
Yeah, that's great. Eskil, thank you very much for taking the time to come talk with us. Anybody that is interested at all in this, the game is free to download off of his website that you mentioned earlier, Kelsolar. It costs $10 a month. So you get $10 and you get to play the game for an entire month. If you're at all interested in this, I highly recommend you at least try that first month. For $10, small investment, you will love it. Definitely check it out. We have our full review in our July issue. Eskil, thanks again for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing how you're going to be advancing this in the future.
Oh yeah, there's going to be a lot of cool stuff happening to the game. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it myself.
Great. Then we will be talking to you soon, I'm sure.
Thank you for that, Josh. And now back to our regularly scheduled program. We're going to jump right into playlists now. So, Evan, what have you been playing?
Let's see. According to Steam, I put 4.5 hours into TF2, 2 in Left 4 Dead 2, and 10 in Arma 2 in the past couple weeks.
Your old standbys.
Pretty much. I was saying to Josh this week, he was saying back to me, like, it's good that we all specialize in kind of different genres for the most part. You know, Josh has MMOs. Dan, you got strategy covered. I've got shooters covered. There's a lot of crossover, but because like Josh is saying, like no matter what I do, no matter what I play, like we always just come back to those games. It's like they just suck us back. But I need to play Conviction. I just finished installing it today, and I really want to knock that out because it's a quick 7 or 8 hour experience from what I've been hearing. And I haven't played any other games in the series in a long time since the first one, so I need to knock that out over the weekend and hopefully finish Penal Zone as well. Fingers crossed. And I just reinstalled the StarCraft 2 beta on my new machine. I can play that with you guys.
Okay. Oh,
you can invite me.
Yeah, we can all suck together.
Terrific. is the map editor live for everybody? Is that
I believe it is. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. So I'll probably,
I already saw a kart racer.
What?
Yes.
What's the cart?
It's the flamethrowing dune buggy that the Terran get.
Hellion, right. Is that it?
Yeah, it, yeah, Hellion.
That's impressive.
Cool. Do you shoot turtle shells out of it or something?
No. I just saw it on YouTube. I haven't played it, so.
Wow.
We should play it this weekend, though.
Yeah, we'll track it down.
Yeah. And Josh, what are you playing?
I've just been playing lots and lots of StarCraft 2. I'm getting the hang of it. I'm not a great RTS guy, but I did beat Dan twice this week.
Not in a 2v2 where I was on a team with Eric.
That's yeah. That is a handicap beyond recognition.
Yeah. So I've been playing a lot with my brother, which has been really fun. So it's really nice having that consistent 2v2s team. I mean, neither of us are great, but it's just nice having that consistent partner that you kind of know what they're going to do, and you can plan out like, okay, you get 4 Zerglings, I'll get 5 Marines, rush it, and then, you know, complement our armies after that. It's been really fun. I'm liking this game a lot more the more I play it.
Yeah, as I recall, Josh, I kicked the crap out of you in one of those before your partner saved your ass.
That sounds hazy. I don't remember that. Yeah, I'm sure that happened.
But anyway, Eric, what have you been playing?
A little Adventures of, or sorry, Misadventures of PB Winterbottom, which is a, I would say, Braid-esque. For my money, it's quite a bit easier than Braid, but it's still a fun, puzzle with time traveling elements where you're recording yourself. And in the end, truly, like, the story is your only objective is to travel through time and space itself to get more pie. So it's my kind of objective.
It's like playing the game of Eric's life.
Exactly. You know?
He travels through time and space trying to get pi. Yes. Only forward in time, you know, and at the speed that time naturally progresses, and only, you know, as fast as his legs can carry him, but he walks towards pi and eats it.
Basically my life. Other than that.
Don't say it, Eric. Don't name what should not be named.
Is it really that bad?
What is it? I want to know.
I'll give an anagram for it. It's anal wake.
Is that really an anagram?
You figured it out.
Okay, yeah. I guess it is. Yeah.
I was not going to be talking about the games on the box with the 360s. I was just going to mention that I've kind of been playing a disgusting amount of World of Warcraft, which Josh can attest to.
Very well.
This weekend, I grinded out 9 levels, and so at this point I'm level 52. That takes some effort, so eventually I'll reach 80.
I was very proud.
Don't type / played. You'll regret it. Andy, how about you?
After last week's interview with Evan and the dude from Mountain Blade, I downloaded it with every intention to get in there, but
yes. Oh no.
Yeah, I bought it on Steam, but I haven't gotten in there yet because I've been a little busy, but I have been making time for Trials HD, of course, still trying to get platinum medals. Cause man, that game is just so addicting. It's so rewarding. Like, I really wish it was on PC so more people, like people, our people could get into it. But it's
if you just want to try Mountain Blade,
yeah,
go start it up, go to quick battle. And it's like a skirmish mode. It loads in 5 seconds and you suddenly have like 50 guys in front of you and you shoot them and you're in and you're out in minutes. And
nice.
Yeah.
So wait a minute, Trials HD, isn't that the one with the motorbike?
Yeah,
that's on PC.
It's different on PC. I have the PC version. It's older and it's not nearly as good. They sort of made a new one for the Xbox Live Arcade, and it's so solid. Like, it's like the best game on Xbox, I think, which is sad. Oh, and I did play some Splinter Cell Conviction too, Evan. So I'm hoping
we're gonna have to get some multiplayer and co-op going on this weekend, because I've played through the single player plenty, but I really want to dig my hands into the multiplayer.
As for myself, I've been playing some Serious Sam HD, the second encounter for the review. It's a very simplistic, you know, back to basics, shoot everything that moves kind of game, which is, you know, a lot of fun if that's what you're in the mood for. I have only two gripes with it, really. One, I wish they hadn't even bothered to you know, kind of break up the shooting with jumping puzzles, because that's just, you know, lame. Who wants to do a jumping puzzle? And also, why are there no auto save points?
Oh, yeah.
Why not?
Old school. It's preserving the old school experience.
Yeah, European developer.
But I mean, I was having this discussion with somebody today. What does not having autosave add to the experience? I mean, there's absolutely nothing that I gain in playing a game by hitting the quick save button or having to remember to do that. And all it does is piss you off when you forget to do it. So, I mean, that's just not good.
OMG, you've been console-fied.
It's got nothing to do with the console.
Totally does.
I don't want checkpoint only saves. I want to be able to autosave or quick save wherever I want. But autosaving and, you know, just, you know, do I have to make my own macro to hit F6 it's F6 in Serious Sam, but do I have to make that macro myself?
Like in games like Stalker, it becomes an art. The art of the quick save, man.
Even Stalker has autosaves, doesn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Like Fallout 3 always used to annoy me a bit when I was wandering around in the wastelands for like an hour, and I would not hit autosave because that game only autosaves when you go through a door.
Yeah.
But you know, even that, you know, saves when you go through a door. So that's my little Serious Sam rant. Cool. But other than that, it's a lot of fun. Although I hate the skeleton guys when they send a billion of those guys at you. It's monstrously difficult. Yeah. Anyway.
Can I give a quick shout out real quick, Dan?
Sure.
Shout out to myself. Okay. So
this one goes out to Evan Dodger.
Yeah. So I like Arma. We know that. And I started a podcast with a couple of my friends that I play with. One of them is named Keenan Weaver. He runs a little website called game-central.org. But we started a podcast dedicated to Arma. You can find it at armapodcast.com. We've only got episode one up there right now. We're probably going to record the next one over the weekend. And it's not some crazy, super hardcore, you know, obscure talking about bullet ranges and things like that. It's, you know, we're just talking about the spirit of the game and the essence of the game and why we like it and talking about co-op missions and highlighting mods and things like that. So
I thought the spirit of Arma was bullet ranges. And,
yeah. That's the mystery we're uncovering together, I guess. We're embarking on that. So if you can't get enough of me talking about that crazy military simulation nonsense, head on over and check it out.
Yeah, I also want to give a not quite a self-promotion shout out, but for a game called Frozen Synapse. I've been playing a little bit of that beta as well. It's a simultaneous turn-based strategy game, where you, plot out, you know, it pauses, you've got a squad of guys, you plot out about 10 seconds worth of orders, and then it plays out the orders in real time against another player or the AI, and your orders, you know, interact with their orders and hilarity ensues. So, and it really reminds me a lot of one of my old favorite games called Laser Squad Nemesis. But it is awesome. So I recommend, checking that out. It should be coming out relatively soon. It's in beta right now.
It's been referred to by our UK magazine as a sort of like a turn-based top-down Counter-Strike.
In a way, yeah. I mean, because it's squad-based. So, and, you know, the different dudes have different weapons. So, It's not quite, you know, XCOM-esque, but close enough. I mean, you know, it's a very different style of game than XCOM in that, you know, the orders are carried out in real time, so turn-based, but it's the same kind of spirit of that game. That will about do it for us this week. You can, wait, what am I doing in what order?
Call
them. Oh yeah, okay, right. Durr, okay. That'll about do it for us this week. We didn't get to questions this week because we had an extra long interview, but next week we will. You can call in and leave us a question for us to answer at the number that Andy will now read.
1-877-404-1337. extension 724.
And keep it clean and keep it to a minute, please. You can also email us an MP3 question at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Also, keep those to a minute. Also, you can visit us at pcgamer.com if you'd like to subscribe to our lovely magazine. You can check out the PC Gamer blog that we're doing with our UK brethren at pcgamer.co.uk. You can read us at Facebook or sign up to, I guess you like us on Facebook now instead of fan us. They keep changing everything.
Yeah, they're so weird. Yeah.
So you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCGamerMagazine. And yeah, I think that's all the things I have to read off.
Are we good? If you make two Facebook profiles, you can like us.
That's true.
And then it's real.
All right. All right. So we will see all of you next week.
Bye. How many people were...
Oh,
we lost there.
Did you...
Evan?
Come in, Evan. Come in.
Evan! Where'd you go?
Man down.
Oh, he's dead.
We didn't roll... Apparently we didn't get Evan card in this hand.
Black opt.
Black opt.
Yeah, drop him and call him again.
He already looks like dropped him.
In the works for so far.
It's bad marketing.
What is that noise?
Is someone's playoff beard rubbing against the mic?
Yeah, what is that noise?
It's Eric.
Eric, is your playoff beard rubbing against the mic?
Maybe. I'll move my mic further away.
It sounded like a cat was licking the microphone.
I heard toothbrushing.
Okay. So, yeah, it was...